DVD presented by Bax Homeworks. Bax Homeworks transforms kitchens, bathrooms, and living spaces into places you can't wait to come home to. Welcome back in, Connor Newt. Derek Mason here with you on the program. Adam Vingan, Willie Donick out today, so I'm stepping in to take control of the program. As we are every Friday here on the program, we are joined by Outkick's Chad Withrow to talk about the Titans and some topics going on in college football. Chad, hello.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Doing well.
I'm so, pretty good.
Let's get things started here. The Titans are obviously on the bye week this week, so we are not subjected to watching their horrible football just for the week. At 1-8 on the season, is there any way throughout the rest of the season that they can regain your attention?
No, none at all. There's not a single way that this team can regain my attention at this point. I mean, look, the only intrigue right now is who's going to get the number one pick between them, the Jets, and the Saints. So I guess they will get my attention when they play the Saints coming up, because that could be a game for the number one seed. But, you know, the Titans aren't in the market for a quarterback. So, you know, even if they get that number one pick, will they find a team that loves a quarterback enough to trade up with them where they can get multiple picks? I mean, guys, it's just a situation where there's been so many bad picks and bad free agency pickups that have either ended in players being disappointments or injured or whatnot that, I mean, they need multiple picks. That they need so much right now, and I don't think that they're going to draft over Cam Ward, even though he's been a disappointment in year one. I don't think you can do that with a number one pick or a top pick this year. That it's hard to get excited about right now without thinking about the future and all the different pieces that the Titans need moving forward.
Speaking of the future and pieces that the Titans need moving forward, we just had a conversation about Jeffrey Simmons and the decision not to trade him. Would you, if you were in charge and Jerry Jones picked up the phone and called you and gave you the offer he gave to the New York Jets, which was a first-round pick for next year, a second-round this year, and defensive tackle Mozzie Smith for Jeffrey Simmons, would you, Chad Withrow, take that offer?
In a heartbeat, I would have taken that offer. I mean, look, I think the Jets, as big of a disappointment as that franchise has been over the years and recently, they look like the smartest team going by offloading the players they did and getting the picks they did, especially with the Colts and Sauce Gardner. Look, Sauce Gardner is a good player, and the Colts could go on to win a Super Bowl this year. And, you know, we're all screaming, what was the Rams scream? F those picks. That could be what the Colts are saying after this season because they won the Super Bowl. But if they don't, the Jets, depending on who they draft, I mean, they're sitting pretty right now. So, yeah, I mean, it was a disappointment again that the Titans weren't able to get rid of some of their top talent to acquire some draft picks moving forward for next year. Because, again, this whole organization just needs a complete overhaul. The hope is that Cam Ward is a building block. Maybe a few of the other young guys can be building blocks, and then you completely start over. So you're not able to do that if you don't get rid of some of your talent that's a little bit older to go and acquire picks. So, yeah, I would – to answer your question, Connor, yeah, I'm taking that deal in a heartbeat.
Now, Chad, I'm actually the same question I asked Paul yesterday because I think a lot of people were thirsting for, you know, somebody other than Borgonzi to speak. And me, other than Brinker, to speak. And Borgonzi got up there, and to me, it seems like he sort of distanced himself, not in a bad way, but distanced himself from Brinker. Like, listen, this is, I'm the GM. These are the things that I'm doing. This is why we did what. What do you make of his presser? And do you think he separated himself a little bit from Brinker?
Look, I think that Chad Brinker does a really good job of separating himself from every possible bad decision that happens. He's really good at that. That's what I've noticed, right? Like, you know, we've all worked in different organizations and we've been around different middle managers that they're not quite the big boss, but they're a big enough boss that they can affect your day-to-day work that are really good at separating themselves from anything negative that could happen. Right? It's always someone else's fault. It's always their responsibility. Or I'm on top of this, and I just want you to know about this because this person's not doing their job. I don't know Chad Brinker personally. He's just been a part of a failing organization, and I feel like he continues to get the benefit of the doubt because he's in such a, I don't know if strange is the right word, but he's in a position that's murky enough where he can assign blame to others. I like that Mike Borgonzi is stepping up and saying, hey, this is my responsibility. This is what I do. You know, here's how I'm moving forward with the roster. You know, all of that. I'm fine with all that, D-Mace. I just think, again, and I'm beating a dead horse with this, the Titans are going to be unable to move forward until they have one person in charge of the football side of that operation. Until they get one competent, strong leader in that spot, and we're not asking about Brinker and Borgonzi or Borgonzi or Brinker and all of that, they're in a tough spot. I don't think Amy Adams Strunk wants to lose. I don't think Amy Adams Strunk is in there meddling with every little decision on a day-to-day basis. I just think she's made poor decisions with who she's hired to lead the organization, and she's got too many cooks in the kitchen. That's the biggest issue right now with the, with this team. And both these guys might be okay. Certainly I'm giving Ozzy the benefit of the doubt because he hasn't been here that long. But you need one voice. You need one person. And you don't need something that's murky hanging over the organization. And I continue to believe that they have.
Now, let's double back around on the Jeffrey Simmons none trade. And I understand and I get why you and, you know, everybody else, was because it seems like I'm one of few. And when I mean few, I'm talking about there may be some hundreds, but we're still in the minority that felt that Jeffrey Simmons didn't need to be traded. But I understand where y'all are coming from. This team is devoid of talent. They need talent. How do you get that? You draft. But when you hear your GM say, we had to get rid of, we had to trade another guy because we do not have the locker room necessarily to take on whatever it is Jarvis Landry was accused of doing, that should say to everybody, man, I know y'all wanted Jeff to go, but he's going to be key in what this next iteration of the Tennessee Titans look like. Because I think they're going to sign him back to an extension, so he's going to be here for the next 3 years.
Yeah, I think from a play standpoint, I'm totally fine with that, right? Like, I, you know, if you want your team to play like someone right now and the young guys to play like someone, I'm pointing to 98 and saying, go play like that guy, right? Go be a factor in games, play that physical, play with that kind of edge. Like, I get all that. I never thought that Jeffrey Simmons is this natural locker room leader. And I don't know that you need a defensive tackle to be that. You need him to be a really good defensive tackle, which he is. And I do think that he is good enough in this league that he could lead by example. So I totally understand the value of why you keep that guy if you think that he is going to show the young guys how to be what you want the Tennessee Titans to be. So I completely get that. I'm looking at this from dollars and cents and all of the different needs of this team. And I don't know that a high-priced defensive tackle that has a lot of value on the open market is worth it, even if he is a good example. What you do, I think, in this situation is you trade him away, you go draft guys. If you're confident in your abilities, you go draft guys that are going to be the example setters moving forward. You're going to have a new young nucleus anyways. You can do that with the first off, the coaching hire, right? You would hope the new coach, whoever they hire, is going to be someone who's going to set a good example for the rest of the team. But, yeah, I mean, look, Jeffrey Simmons, I know that he does a lot in this community. I know he likes Nashville. I'm not saying he's trying to rush to get out of here. I'm not so sure that Jeffrey Simmons, though, wouldn't have liked to be a part of a team that could contend for a Super Bowl had he been traded, right? I mean, I think that it's good for everyone involved if they make that move. But, look, I get it. Like, if anybody wants to make the argument that you need that dude in your locker room, I understand where they're coming from with that. I just think the Titans need a lot more than a really good defensive tackle.
We're talking with Chad Withrow, Outkick.com. Chad, before we get you out of here, I wanted to ask you about the college football playoff rankings. One, were you surprised? Is there anything that surprised you? And then two, why does Texas get the benefit of, well, not Texas, but Notre Dame gets the benefit of losing close games, but Vanderbilt, and I get the name on the helmet, I get it, but Vanderbilt doesn't get that same sentiment when it comes to the two teams they lost too close.
Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, look, I understand Notre Dame, and we all know they're going to get in even with two losses, but I mean, they had two giant opportunities, right? They get Texas A&M at home. They got Miami on the road earlier in the year, and they were close games, but they lost both those games, and they haven't played anyone. They were underwhelming in a win over 1-8 Boston College this past weekend, so they didn't exactly sprint into that first college football playoff ranking. I don't get it with them. I think Vanderbilt is about where they need to be. Look, if Vandy can win out, they're going to be in the college football playoff. I believe that. Now, it's going to be tough starting tomorrow. I mean, I think Auburn, they got the talent to beat Vandy. They got the defense to beat Vandy. The question is, can they score? Which they haven't been able to do that all year, but we'll see tomorrow in that game. There were no big surprises, D-Mace. I will say, like, we could sit here and argue the top three teams. I could make an argument for any one of those three to be the number one team. Mm-hmm. This is my one critique, though. I do not like when Mac Rhodes comes on afterward and says, oh, you know, all three of those teams are great, A&M and Ohio State. But, you know, the metrics showed us that Indiana and Ohio State have a better defense. So we put them 1-2. And I'm thinking, okay, well, look at their schedule. Look at the offenses A&M's played versus the offenses that Indiana and Ohio State played. Problem is, we could pick any one metric and argue for one team over another. And I hate when a committee chair comes on and says something like that, because it's very easy to nitpick that decision when they do it. Now, that being said, I got no problem with Ohio State being number one. I would have no problem with A&M or Indiana being at number one either.
Talking with Chad Withrow of Outkick. Chad, last one before we let you go here. There was a tweet put out earlier this week by one Josh Pate, basically saying that Tennessee fans had too high of expectations this year, and now sitting at three losses, they're living with the consequences of said expectations. I can't really buy into that narrative. I'm curious of your opinion on that.
So I think he's right, but I think the time of the expectations changed, okay? And here's what I mean by that. Like, if you would have told me coming into the season Tennessee was going to go 8-4, I would have, as a Tennessee fan, a Tennessee grad, I would have taken it, okay? You knew nothing about the quarterback. He came in after spring practice, did not get a single spring practice in. Tennessee didn't know a lot about the quarterback. The quarterback didn't even know what he was going to look like in this offense. You had all these question marks at wide receiver and offensive line and everything else. The one thing you thought you had was a really good secondary, right, with Jermaine McCoy and Ricky Gibson. So knowing that Jermaine McCoy and Ricky Gibson are both out for the year, and that Joe, I think expectations changed with that Georgia game, right? Tennessee had Georgia beat and looked good in that game. And from that point forward, suddenly, oh, this is a team that can make the college football playoff. So once they don't make the playoff, everyone is disappointed. So I think Josh Pate is both right and wrong. Preseason expectations, absolutely. Tennessee is 5-3 or 6-3 right now. That's about where they should be based on preseason expectation. But expectation post close Georgia loss, I think that's why fans are disappointed. Tennessee fans are also disappointed for this reason. They should have won two of those games. I mean, they miss a kick against Georgia.
Agreed.
They spot Oklahoma 13 points. And guys, even doing that, they could have swapped kickers before kickoff and won the game, because Oklahoma's kicker won the game, hitting three field goals of 50-plus yards. And Tennessee's kicker misses a 37-yarder, and it's a 6-point game in the end. So that's the disappointment, is Tennessee just can't seemingly get over the hump in those close games. But as I say that, they also won an overtime game at Mississippi State. So just buckle up. This is going to be the SEC every single year. Lots of close games, lots of opportunities for close losses.
It is indeed. He's Chad Withrow of Outkick. He joins the program every Friday. Chad, thank you so much. We'll do this again next week.
Yeah, lots of fun, guys. Have a good weekend.
You as well. Chad Withrow of Outkick joining the program. I've never done an interview with Chad. It was fun.
Yeah, Chad. I mean, I enjoy talking with Chad and Hutt, because, you know, both of them have so much knowledge in just sports here.
Right.
But then in particular, you know, with the Vols.
Yeah.
With the Titans and somewhat with the Vandy. But just like, because they give a different perspective. And they understand, just because somebody else has a different opinion, it doesn't mean that it's wrong. They're just,
right.
We're just talking.
It's
that's why, that's why I like to ask Chad and Hutt questions, because I know I'm gonna get a different answer, and it's not necessarily that the answer is wrong. It's just a different answer from what I was thinking.
Right.
No.
They'll shoot you straight.
Yes.
Indeed. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. When we come back, we'll transition into more college football talk. I'm curious, based on Chad's answer there and opinions of the people in this room right now, did the Vols fans have too high of expectations coming into the season? Are they dealing with those consequences now? And is this season overall a failure for the Tennessee Volunteers? That's all coming up next right here on DVD. Connor Newt, Derek Mason here with you on 102.5 The Game.